I do not want my fellow country man and woman to suffer. I don't want to see another lost generation. I want these people to be able to process the tragedy that's happened to them and continue happening and be able to move forward with their lives, truly move forward.
Thank you, Olga, for hopping on the Maps Canada podcast.
Thank you so much for giving me an opportunity.
Yeah, so for people just hopping on, the Maps Canada podcast is a resource for science-based information, learning, and invigorating conversations, including this one. So subscribe to keep up to date with the psychedelic movement in Canada and around the world. Here we have Olga Chernalost. As a trained neuropharmacologist and a registered pharmacist, Olga has held a number of roles in clinical trial management, drug development, biotech, and pharmaceutics. Dr. Chernalost is a specialist in the pharmacology of psychoactive compounds. So that includes our favorite ones, psychedelics. Olga is an associate professor at the University of Ottawa, where she teaches the neuroscience of psychedelics, which is fascinating. Thank you for being on here.
Thank
Thank
you,
you so
Olga.
much for having me.
It's exciting having you because this is a very interesting topic. And I'll save the interesting stuff for you to let us know. But can you tell us a bit about your role as a scientist, neuropharmacologist, and how you came to get into and focus on psychedelics and psychedelic research?
I've been fascinated with the brain and hence mental health for quite a while, and I've been working in mental health research on many sides and aspects of it for many, many years. And back in 2018, 19, when I started seeing research coming out of these very reputable research centers around the world with data from clinical trials with psychedelics, I just couldn't believe how persuasive the data was. I'm a scientist to the core, very pragmatic and data-driven person, and to see numbers, recovery rates that psychedelic medicines in association with therapy have provided to people suffering from various mental health disorders, we just don't have anything quite like that in psychiatry today and treatment of mental health disorders at large. And it seems too good to be true, but it is actually true. So seeing this immense potential of this not really new class of drugs, but something that comes back into research focus was so inspiring to me. I just had to be a part of it, and I've now been working in clinical research with psychedelic substances for about 2, 3 years, and I couldn't be more excited to be part of it.
That's
Probably
great.
more longer than that now. Time really flies.
Well, it's great when scientists and academics are behind psychedelics, not just the mainstream. So that's always good to hear.
Awesome. And Olga, by the way, where are you calling in from? Are you in Ottawa or where are you based?
I'm now Toronto-based.
Got it. Awesome. Yeah, we have a presence over there with our people. So, being in Canada, how has the war in Ukraine impacted you? And what made you to decide to advocate on the mission to bring psychedelic research to war-induced trauma, specifically for Ukrainian refugees?
I was born and raised in Ukraine. I graduated from Pharmaceutics University back there, so I lived a good portion of my life in Ukraine. So when the war broke out just over a year ago, of course, first it was shock. And I guess everybody's still in state of disbelief that something like that could be taking place in 21st century. But starting to come to my senses, I started to think about what is the most impactful way that I could help my people and my motherland. And by working in clinical field tightly related to mental health, working with psychedelic medicines now, I think that it's very unfortunate and very tragic, but we will have such a mass trauma. It's going to be a society-wide trauma, considering the methods of war that Russia is engaging in. And today, when we talk about mental trauma, mental injury, when we talk about PTSD, there are no specific drugs developed to treat PTSD. We can treat pain, or we can treat sleep, or we can treat mood disorders that are associated with PTSD, but not the core illness itself. So today, when I think PTSD, I think MDMA. And again, this is all because of the weight of data used by numerous clinical trials. And MAPS is behind the majority of them because, again, when I think PTSD today, I think MDMA-assisted therapy. Mm-hmm. So I started thinking about bringing this treatment modality to Ukraine as a viable therapeutic option, something that doctors in Ukraine could have in their tool belt as an option. As I started looking into it and being familiar with the world of psychedelics, controlled substances in general, regulatory regime generally around the world, around these substances and processes that are involved in bringing them to market, I knew that it's not just going to be a straightforward pathway. Well, is hope. I hoped that it would be easier, that it is turning out to be, but there's always a way. Originally, I thought that based on all the clinical work that MAPS has done, phases two, now successful phase threes, I thought that we could just, in a way, replicate and expand on the existing work and run trial like that in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. When I started digging into practicalities of doing that, I realized that today psychedelics and related substances regulated in Ukraine in such a way that no activity can take place, not clinical research, not even preclinical research. You cannot put psychedelics into mice or into cell culture.
So you can't do psychedelic research in Ukraine right now?
Not at all.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, sometimes we tie in ketamine into general umbrella of psychedelics. So yeah. Ketamine is out there worldwide. It's on WHO list of necessary meds, yeah. But it isn't a true psychedelic. And with that one exception, no work with psychedelics, no research activity with psychedelics can take place with Ukraine today with the current legislation. Because of MAPS's brave, persistent, and clever work, and research institutions around the world have been fighting this stigma, fighting through it, finding ways in persuading regulators and ethic boards in allowing a pathway for researching therapeutic potential of this type of medicine. So there is a pathway, and there is a precedent, and we will pursue it. And again, just be persistent, clever. And when I found out that this line of research would not be possible to carry out in Ukraine, I thought that, well, unfortunately, today with war in Ukraine, we have biggest documented human migration crisis in the history of the world. We have 7 million of people who were forced out of country by this brutal war. We have another 7 million of people who had to migrate within the country to the safer regions. So it's 14 million people not sleeping in their beds tonight, yeah. And they haven't for a month. They're forced out of their homes and out of their lives by the brutal terror of real war. Because a significant portion of these people are now sheltering in Europe, in North America, throughout the world, really. I thought that we have, the Ukrainians, traumatized by this war, somewhere where we can actually do run research. So I came up with an idea of running clinical trials with the Ukrainian population affected by this awful war, but just doing it elsewhere. So now I'm very happy to say that several partners raised their hand and were graceful enough to take up a role on investigating this. So today we have one trial that will assess the effectiveness of MDMA-assisted therapy on PTSD in Ukrainian refugees who are sheltering in Netherlands. And it will be run by the ARC-45 Trauma Center, who's specializing in trauma research. And they have already participated in research trials with psychoactive substances, so they know very well both the type of trauma that we're unfortunately dealing with and the type of substances that we are hoping can help people in, you know, just stepping out of feeling victimized burdens to getting back to being productive and contributing members of the society. Refugees is a huge problem, not only with this war. Unfortunately, this one is the war that I personally very much affected by and feel it and know it. But throughout the history of humanity, wars have never left us, or we have never stopped fighting them. So there are always displaced, traumatized people in need of help. And, you know, now looking at this tragedy, we realize how fragile our mental health is, and, you know, anxiety and depression and substance abuse related to this war is spilling out onto wider population, because, you know, we were already together tormented by the global pandemic. Mm-hmm. Our mental health wasn't great 5 years ago. And then the pandemic happened, and it hit us hard with all the quarantines and lockdowns and economic distress. And it just amplified the issues that's been there for a long, long time that affect our mental health in a very negative way. We're dealing with inequality and poverty and debt and job and food insecurity and underemployment and child adversity, and it just keeps adding up and keeps putting pressure and keeps affecting our mental well-being. And you know, it's not just our mental health. It disrupts public services. It has negative effect on physical health. So it is, you know, we have to look for silver linings in everything. Mm-hmm. And if there is anything these tragedies should teach us, is to pay attention, more to what happens inside us, to recognize finally mental health as a real part of our health, and start working on both socioeconomic factors contributing to our ill mental health, as well as finding new ways to treat it. And psychedelic medicine is one of such avenues.
That's amazing that you got this far. You know, you went from a one-woman kind of advocacy to, at least it's great to hear that you have partners now, because I can't imagine this is something that's easy to do. It's hard enough when you have the finances to do it. It's another thing when, you know, you're trying to push something like this forward. Maybe tell us a little bit about where you are now in terms of the Netherlands and the study that you're doing and what you're hoping to achieve from a data point of view from this study.
Absolutely. So,
and sorry, Olga, this is the only study like this, correct? Because I haven't seen anything that's looking at war trauma.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Now, if you want to support and become part of the psychedelic movement, feel free to donate to MAPS Canada at the link in the description below. Thank you for helping our mission to support equitable access to legal and regulated psychedelic medicines for all Canadians.
I believe that it is the only trial like that. For Ukrainian war, I have my hand on the pulse when I think I know of majority of things happening in and around this space. So if as a result of this podcast something else surfaces up and we can join forces,
yeah, I was gonna say it. I said it more so you could join forces if somebody else out there is looking to do the same thing.
Absolutely. So the Dutch study is lined up to begin in January of 2024. And of course, we always want everything as soon as possible. Yesterday, we would want it not to be needed at all, ideally, but that's not how things work. So everything takes time. And unfortunately, January 2024 is the realistic timeline, and that's when the refugee study will start enrolling. I'm very excited by, and again, it's not a thing to drive any joy from, but considering that I am on this pathway and this mission, the more things can be done complementary, the higher likelihood of success. And then in this case, success looks like rescheduling that would allow legal use of psychedelic medicine in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So on pathway of bringing controlled substances to medical plane, we know how important and instrumental veteran population has been. And aside from refugees, separately as its own study, we are now discussing another research initiative that would be targeting Ukrainian war veterans. And a similar study has been planned by the research hospital in Israel for their own veteran military members. And it seems like we'll be able to expand it and add, so to say, Ukrainian arm. And I'm very hopeful that not only will be able to collect very meaningful data that, you know, together with the everything that MAPS has done in this area, and considering where they are and the regulatory pathway in the United States, when we combine what's been done already in decades of clinical research by MAPS with this very targeted and population and trauma-specific data that will look at DMA-assisted therapy and its effects on trauma in Ukrainian refugees and in the Ukrainian military population. I hope that we can take this data, put it on the tables of decision makers in Ukraine, and lobby through regulatory changes that will help likely millions of people.
So the Ukraine refugee study that's happening in Netherlands, for the Israel one, does that mean that veterans are going to Israel for that study? Because yes. Obviously there's no regulatory pathway in Ukraine. I mean, I guess that could impact the regulatory in Ukraine because they can't ignore that it's Ukraine refugees in the study and Ukraine veterans, right? Even though it's not physically happening in Ukraine, it's hard to ignore that it's the population. So that's absolutely really interesting. So,
and I think, you know, another avenue that one needs to consider working with regulators, not only the treatment that is being proposed has to be safe and efficacious, of course, but it has to make monetary sense as well, right? Because that's at the end of the day what politics are being driven by. Will it create savings in health and socioeconomic systems in general? So I'm very grateful to group in the United States. It's a group out of UC Davis and UC San Francisco that's working on calculating cost effectiveness of psychedelic assisted therapy, and they've agreed to take on the Ukrainian arm, so to say, and crunch the numbers that, again, can be added on to this clinical portion of the data to show that, you know, when we successfully treat people who otherwise would be unwell for years and sometimes decades, as we know with PTSD, it can happen. If we can show that these people can be efficaciously, quickly treated, then hopefully it will be another lever to persuade politicians, decision makers, and those who hold the keys to rescheduling, so to say.
That's great.
Do you have a timeline for the one that's happening with Ukraine veterans? Is it, you said January 2024 for the other one in Netherlands? Do you have a timeline?
I'm hoping so. There is no definite timeline on the veteran study yet, but I know that the Israeli arm of the study, so the original study, is quite far on the pathway of reviews, drafting, approvals. So hoping to piggyback of that and make it out of plans and into reality sooner rather than later.
Right. I'm curious. So let's say we were in an ideal world and there weren't these regulatory blocks in Ukraine for doing a study. In fact, let's say they were fully on board and said, Olga, you have full reign to oversee and administer MDMA-assisted therapy for internal refugees in Ukraine and soldiers. What would you envision? How would you envision that being implemented?
To be honest with you, I don't think that it's a carpet approach to let's take every person who is unwell today and put them into psychedelic-assisted or MDMA-assisted therapy. I think that for many cases of psychological, even psychiatrical imbalances, there are better ways to address it at first. And I think that oftentimes we are too eager for quick and easy solutions that to our own detriment we neglect fairly, well, not fairly simple, very simple things that are accessible to everybody. Exercise and sunlight, and, you know, if you can't sleep well, at least you can do things to improve your sleep hygiene and being a member of the community, you know, going out and knocking on your neighbor's door and sharing a cup of coffee or dinner with them, or going around the neighborhood and picking up garbage and just feeling as a member of community that way. You know, there are so many very basic and very key things that we today deprive ourselves from, saying that we are too busy or it's not safe or I can do it for one reason or another. I think that we need to prioritize prevention versus treatment. And when we do that, when we give people space to think about themselves and take care of themselves and their families first, many of the mental health illnesses that we do see today will, if not go away, ease off quite significantly. I think that psychedelic medicine in general is not a silver bullet and not something that will help everybody and anybody, regardless of what it is they suffer from and what led them to that state. I think it's a very useful and very powerful tool, but I don't think that it's a panacea. And again, just being very scientifically minded person, whenever I see something being marketed as a cure-all, I immediately, bells start going off in my head. So,
yeah. And with the timeline of the research, and then later on regulatory changes, and even later on implementation, being on the scale of years at least, are you aware of, or are there initiatives towards those more immediate solutions, maybe we could say, like about like handling sleep in different ways or community support that are going on in Ukraine that you're aware of?
Yes, there are many initiatives that recognize horrific effects of the war on mental well-being of population in general. One very sizable initiative is being headed by the First Lady of Ukraine with the aid of international organizations, WHO and other health-related bodies. So there are initiatives underway, but let's be honest, we know that even when everything is supposedly in place, still we have so many people who are still unable to get better with whatever other means we can have on the table.
Got it. Awesome.
So, Olga, is everything all set to go, or is there some roadblocks that you have to kind of get through to actually actualize these studies?
Well, I wouldn't call it a roadblocks, but it's practicalities of real life.
Yeah.
Everything costs money, and having orchestrated these trials, I would now have to come up with ways to fund these trials. Because again, even though it's I'm endlessly grateful to the research partners that we have on many ends of this very complex issue, mm-hmm. it still costs money to run trials. So we got to fundraise, and to bring these initiatives under one roof, so we have trial for refugees. We have a trial for veterans that's bubbling up. We have the socioeconomic study. So to kind of get beyond of one woman, however passionate, show and into more practical realm, I am starting up a non-for-profit in Canada that will be 100% focused on supporting these initiatives. So clinical research with psychedelic assisted therapies for Ukrainian trauma to ultimately make psychedelic medicine a reality in Ukraine.
That's amazing. Do you have a name for the nonprofit?
Not just yet, okay. But I don't know how long we might take to produce the episode. Maybe it's in the works. It's in the process. By the time we have it ready to go,
okay. So maybe we'll
add it. Will be a name, and there will be an entity, and we can put it to at least to the comment section for sure.
That's
yeah. I don't believe there's a Maps Ukraine that exists yet.
No, but I can tell you that MAPS and MAPS BBC have been very supportive of this initiative. And as your listeners probably know, one of the predicted roadblocks in unrolling psychedelic medicine as a treatment avenue is having trained professionals who know how to work with this treatment modality. And MAPS PBC has stepped up in promising to train a number of Ukrainian practitioners who would then be able to, whatever safe and legal to do it in Ukraine, they will have an experience and training to do just that. So
that's amazing.
The support from MAPS has been with us every step of the way. And in Ukraine, I don't think that I've mentioned, when I started to looking into ways of how we can make it happen, and again, you know, I'm a practical person too. There is all these big scientific questions that we might have, but if you want to make it a reality, you have to be quite practical and have your feet on the ground. And with feet on the ground in Ukraine, I've connected with a terrific group who are leading this work from inside the country for quite some time now. It's a Ukrainian psychedelic research organization. They are working towards the same mission of bringing psychedelic medicine as a legal treatment avenue. And I've been working with them hand in hand on this mission. And I'm just doing my part while they are fighting great many battles on the ground.
Oh, that's amazing. I want to talk a little bit about the socioeconomic, because you know, when you do research, there's a lot of stakeholders, right? People just think, you know, you do this study and you get regulatory approval and you're kind of good to go. You know, there still needs to be reimbursement. So you've got payers, you've got, you know, regulatory, there's all these like stakeholders that you've got to have this data, and why that data is so important. I pulled something from a study. I just want to read it quickly on that socioeconomic piece. So it was a publication that was done. So I'm just going to read it. The cost analysis of five MDMA trials were conducted, and it concluded that the cost of treatment averaged just over $11,000 USD per patient. And they extrapolated this data to 1,000 patients over 30 years, and it's projected to prevent 60 deaths, gain 4.9 quality adjusted years of life per patient, and save just under $133,000 USD per patient over that period in physical and mental healthcare activity. And this was interesting because it was an independent publication that extrapolated data. It wasn't even something that was done within those trials. So I think I just wanted to kind of speak to the volume of how important that is, because we know treatment costs are obviously short-term high. I can send you the link. But short term, it's a high cost. But long term, you kind of have to look at the healthcare spending, you know, physical and mental healthcare spending over a period of time, you know, lives saved, years of quality of life that was gained. So it's not just looking at the 6 weeks or the 3 months or whatever. So I think, you know, that's so critical. And I'm so glad to hear that. Obviously, efficacy, if someone improves, that's important data. Safety is important data. And we know from the phase three studies, the safety data is great, even with the second phase three. So it's really great to see that socioeconomic being built into the study, because it's so critical, like you said, to change minds and to, you know, get these drugs approved as well. Because that's another thing about when we look at equity in terms of, you know, you don't want a situation where some people can afford it, some people can't. We really need these to be open and access to accessible to everyone. So I think that's great that I just wanted to highlight that, because I just want people to kind of visualize what that actually means. So,
and I think what people don't realize that when the responsible agencies approve these medicines, cost of care is not something that's being looked at or factored in. Mm-hmm. It is only safety and efficacy that Health Canada or FDA or EMA or local Ministry of Health are looking at. Mm-hmm. And cost of care is an entirely different beast, and it's rather a tool for politicians, because it's not only the cost of medications that your psychiatrist prescribes. It's not only his time. It's also years of lost ability to work. It's reduced quality of life for the family of affected individuals. So when we look at the all cost of care of illnesses like PTSD or depression, it's a very, very significant.
Yeah.
So if we can not only get people better, but rid people of these illnesses altogether, as we know from the clinical data is possible with these types of treatment, I mean, it's a win, 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 win.
Yeah, definitely. Luke, do you have any other questions?
Yeah, I'm curious. So is with the goal of the study, is it, do you have specific intentions for that to lead down the line to regulation changes in Ukraine, or what is the end vision that you have?
Absolutely. And, you know, again, being driven by very practical purposes, I do not want my fellow country, man and woman, to suffer. I don't want to see another lost generation. I want these people to be able to process the tragedy that's happened to them and continue happening in a as healthy of a manner as possible, and repackage it in a healthy way, acknowledge it, and be able to move forward with their lives, truly move forward. So the entire purpose of these research initiatives is to gather clinical data, highly relevant clinical data, that would be ultimately used to persuade regulators to reschedule and make psychedelic medicine a reality.
And I like when you mentioned that, you know, when you're doing research in the veteran community and population, that does sometimes in itself change the way people look at a certain treatment. So I think that's that study is a kind of an agent for change in itself, because it's hard to argue when you see benefits in that area, and specifically in veterans.
Absolutely. And, you know, now in the past 2 years, I wasn't the only person amazed by the apparent benefits of psychedelic medicine. U.S., Canadian, European politicians are seeing this data as well. Mm-hmm. And veterans are a huge voice that make this data seen and heard.
Yeah.
And in the U.S. now, veteran affairs departments are leading the studies.
Yes.
And across the party lines, there is support for research, at least research, if not access to this type of therapy for veterans. And first and foremost, and knowing from cannabis and other psychoactives, that's been brought to at least medical legality. We know how great of a force veterans are in enabling this change.
And not that, you know, doing these two studies is it's probably enough on your plate, but you're also writing a book.
That's true.
Are you going to have a chapter about these studies in that book? Or
yes and no. The book is going to be called Psychedelics A to Z, and it is chapterized for every letter of the alphabet. We'll be talking about some concept related to psychedelics in general.
Oh, excellent. So, and when is that going to be, when is your timeline for that? Or do you have a timeline for that?
Well, it depends on the muse, but I definitely want to be done before the end of the summer.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm quite well underway in the process.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Are you in a position to tell us a little bit about what the A to Z chapters might contain?
So generally they are different concepts and principles related to psychedelic medicine. So for instance, let's start at the top. So A is going to be ayahuasca, and it will be talking about use of psychoactive substances in cultural traditions around the world. And B will be breakthrough designation by the FDA, which talks about the revolution in clinical research and the weight of the data that brought personally me onto this path. And C going to be talking about creativity and consciousness and cognition effects of psychedelics. So
I'm curious what M will be.
M will be microdosing.
Okay.
MDMA is going to go under X of ecstasy.
Got it. That's fitted in somewhere, yeah. Not
so stay tuned. Perhaps I can come back when the book is out and go through every chapter.
We'll just go like this through the podcast. We'll open it and be like, okay, M, go.
And actually, I hope that opening the book will be an experience as well, because on the one hand, I'm a very scientific person, but I don't like to box myself into some category. I'd like to think open-minded and creative person, and if somebody has met me in real life, people know that I'm a colorful-looking person. So the book will be an illustrated book, and every letter will have an illustration that goes with the chapter. So it's going to be a bit of an art experience as well.
I'm looking for a good coffee table book, I'm just saying. And that would be like, if it's a cool-looking book, that would be really nice to put on my coffee
table. That's what it's going to be.
I love it. Imagine just a conversation with people around. You're like, let's just open the book. I love it.
Yeah, pick the first letter of your name and turn to your chapter.
Exactly. I love it. Book club, a different type of book club.
Yes.
Yeah. If you could have anyone in the world or from the past who isn't alive anymore write your foreword for the book, who would you pick?
That's an interesting question. I think you caught me off guard with this, but I think ex-president Barack Obama would be a great person to have an input on something that's seemingly so innate to human nature as desire to alter our consciousness, and at the same time as controversial as psychedelics are today.
And why Obama specifically?
I don't know, because again, there is this duality of it's always been with us, but it is forbidden at a time. And if we look at the first African-American president in the country with a very complicated story, I think there is a place for duality and change in that.
Excellent.
Got it. Interesting. Sabrina, do you have a question?
No, this is great. I'm just going to put out any last words to the audience. I know maybe we'll end with the fundraising initiatives and maybe more to come with respect to that. We'd love to see this get off the ground.
Absolutely. So I'm truly hoping that by the time the episode comes out, I will be able to put out the details of non-for-profit that will be fundraising for these studies. And again, there is, I'm a one-woman show, very driven, and a woman on a mission with this initiative. But there are no overheads. There are no, marketing or admin budgets. We need to make these studies happen.
Yeah.
There is clear, plain budgets from the people who will be from the research group that will be running them. So the entirety, 100% of the funds raised will go towards making these studies happen. And the entire premise of the reason why I am doing what I'm doing with these initiatives is to make psychedelic medicine reality in one country that badly needs it, and hopefully creates an example for an entire world.
That's amazing. And it's so inspiring, Olga, because I think that, you know, this example is really an example where one person can make a difference. Like you see this need, you have the experience, you have the skills to do this, and you're bringing it forward. So I think it's amazing. And thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Thanks again. And you know what? I'll be truly honest with you. If you ask me 2 years ago about whether I see myself in advocacy, non-for-profits of any sorts, I would say, I'm sorry, no, it's just not me, even though I do non-for-profit work in other capacities. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes a moment comes when you do something not because you have to do it, but because you cannot not do it. So
yeah,
I've had that moment, unfortunately, but that put me on a mission, and I will see it through.
Amazing.
Awesome.
I'm sure.
Well, thank you for what you're doing.
Yay! I'm so excited.
Thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to talk about this initiative. That's very, very, very important to me. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.